Chapter 57. Something off the shelf. The current crisis, whatever underlay it, didn't seem to have affected Big N's appetite. They were all having the full English. Big N was working steadily through his, Gareth doing most of the talking.
"This is a prisoner exchange," Gareth said.
"One hostage for another. Your man assumes, correctly, that you're unlikely to call the police." Big End looked pointedly at Hollis. "We can assume that he hasn't much of a network here," Gareth continued, "else he wouldn't have sent an idiot after Milgram. Neither at this point do you, given the situation in your firm, and we can assume that he knows that via your mole."
"Can one have been a mole on one's own behalf?" asked Big End. "I would assume that everyone is that, to whatever extent."
Gareth ignored this.
"Your mole will know that you aren't much inclined to hire outside security, for reasons you stated. Likewise, your man will know this. Since your man would never have signed off on such a patently ridiculous abduction plan, we can assume that Foley was the planner. Therefore, your man was either not present during the attempt or somehow out of the loop. My guess is that he was already on his way here, likely out of a sense that Foley was cocking up. Foley possibly acted when he did in order to get at Milgram before the boss arrived."
Hollis had never heard Gareth unpack a specific situation this way, though something in his tone now reminded her of his explanations of asymmetric warfare, a topic in which she had a keen and abiding interest. She remembered him telling her how terrorism was almost exclusively about branding, but only slightly less so about the psychology of lotteries, and how this had made her think of Big End.
"So," Gareth said, "it's likely we're dealing with an improvisational plan on their part. Your man has opted for a prisoner exchange. Those, of course, are eminently gameable, though your man knows that, certainly, and is familiar with all applicable tactics, including the one I imagine I'd be most likely to employ."
"Which is?"
"Your man Milgram. Is he obese, extremely tall, memorable-looking?"
"Forgettable," said Big End. "About 10 stone.
"Good."
Gareth was buttering a slice of toast.
"There's a surprising amount of mutual trust necessary in any prisoner exchange. Why, it's gameable."
"You're not giving them Milgram," Hollis said.
"I need to see more to hang success on, Mr. Wilson, if you'll pardon my saying so,"
said Big End, forking beans onto a quarter slice of toast.
"God's in the details," the architects said. "But you have rather a bigger problem here, contextually."
"You refer," Big End said, "to Hollis's unseemly readiness to shop me to the Guardian?"
"Gracie," Gareth said. "I imagine he's doing this because he feels you've been fucking with him, successfully."
"He didn't ask you for money?"
"No."
"Doesn't your mole want money?"
"I'm sure he does," Big End said, "but I would imagine he might be in over his head with these people. I imagine he was looking for a context in which to profitably betray me, but then they found him. He's likely afraid of them, and likely with good reason."
"If you were to turn Milgram over to them," said Gareth, "and get your bobby back intact, they'd be back. You're that wealthy. This bent officer may not yet be thinking in those terms, but your mole already is."
Big End looked uncharacteristically pensive.
"But if you do it the way I do it," said Gareth, "you really will have fucked with them, in a very formal and personal way. They'll come after you."
"Then why would you suggest it?"
"Because," said Hollis, "giving them Milgram is not an option."
"The thing is," said Gareth, "you need to simultaneously fuck with them and neutralize them in some seriously ongoing way."
Big End leaned slightly forward.
"And how would you do that?"
"I'm not prepared to tell you," Gareth said, "at the moment."
"You aren't proposing violence?"
"Not in the way I imagine you mean, no."
"I don't see how you could possibly mount anything very sophisticated in such a short period of time."
"It would have to be something off the shelf."
"Off the shelf?" but Gareth had gone back to his breakfast.
"And just how long have you known Mr. Wilson, Hollis?"
His tone was like some Jane Austen chaperone's.
"We met in Vancouver."
"Really? You had time to socialize?"
"We met one another toward the end of my stay."
"And you know him to be someone capable, in the ways he's proposing to be capable?"
"I do," said Hollis, "although I'm under an agreement with him to say no more than that."
"People who claim capabilities of that sort are most often compulsive liars, though the most peculiar thing about that, in my experience, is that while most bars in America have alcoholics who claim to have been Navy SEALs, there are sometimes former Navy SEALs in those same bars who are alcoholics."
"Gareth's not a Navy SEAL, Hubertus. I don't know what I'd say he is. He's like you that way, a one-off. If he tells you he thinks he can get Bobby back and neutralize this threat for you, then..."
"Yes?"
"Then he thinks he can."
"And what would you propose I do then?" Biggin said to Gareth. "If I were to accept your help?"
"I'd need an idea of whatever tactical resources you may have, in London, if any, that remain uncompromised. I'd need an open operational budget. I'd have to hire some specialists. Expenses."
"And how much do you want yourself, Mr. Wilson?"
"I don't," said Gareth. "Not money. If I can do this to my own satisfaction, and I imagine that that would be to yours as well, you'll let Hollis go. Release her from whatever it is she's doing for you. Pay her what she feels she's owed, and agree to leave her be. And if you can't agree to that, I advise you to start looking for help elsewhere."
Big End, eyebrows raised, looked from Gareth to Hollis. "And you're agreeable to that?"
"It's an entirely new proposition to me."
She poured herself some coffee, buying time to think.
"Actually," she said, "I would require an additional condition."
They both stared at her.
"The Hounds designer," she said to Big End. "You won't have her. You leave her absolutely alone. Quit looking. Call everyone off. Permanently."
Big End pursed his lips.
"And," said Hollis, "you'll find Meredith's shoes and give them to her."
A silence followed, Big End looking at his plate, the corners of his mouth turned down.
"Well," he said at last, looking up at them, "none of this would have been the least attractive before 7:20 this morning. But here we are, aren't we?"